It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode Number 4. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation, as the Pittsburgh Steelers chugging right along at training camp of 2023. Friday Night Lights practice is tonight. Hopefully they're calling for some rain, some storms, but fingers crossed we'll have it because it has not occurred since 2019. So really looking forward to that. Dave, how you doing? Football's back. A Hall of Fame game last night.
Yeah, absolutely. That was, entertaining to at least be around for the start of it. It's something new. We've been making good time lately with the special edition podcast and all. And man, what's the weather going to be Friday night? I'm worried for all those people. They haven't had a real Friday Night Lights practice in some time. And I hope they're able to get it in tonight. Cause I remember last year, I think even the great David O posted some pictures of throwback to last year. All of y'all huddled up underneath an umbrella or two up there. And obviously I think that was right before the deluge came in and lightning and you had to start hitting the parking lots there. So, we'll keep our fingers crossed that they can get in practice number 8, I guess, for the public here. And I guess that means at this point we're more than halfway through 2023 training camp, right?
Pretty wild for sure. Assuming they do hold Friday Night Lights, it should be really jam-packed because I think people are itching to get back out there to the high school. Backs on backers should take place tonight. It's going to be a really fun environment, provided that the weather holds up. Hopefully the lights stay on, unlike Tom Benson Stadium last night. Lights going off there in the fourth quarter. Do you have any, just not that we're looking and taking too much stock into a Browns-Jets preseason game, but A, because it's the Browns, did you have any sort of thoughts on that game?
I thought DTR. What's his initials?
DTR. Dorian Thompson.
Robinson. I thought he did some interesting things in that game. Showed some of the stuff that I think that we briefly talked about ahead of the draft and all like that. I thought that who was the first running back for the Browns in that game?
John Kelly, I think.
Yeah. I thought Kelly did some interesting things in there. I didn't get a chance to focus much on offensive, defensive line, stuff like that. I mean, there was obviously a lot of sloppy play in there. A lot of penalties, you see some illegal formation stuff and along that like that. But then Izzy, Izzy had the first touchdown run, I think, for the Jets. So it's going to be interesting to watch his career path going forward. But just loose kind of observations like that.
Yeah, my only big takeaway, and I think, DTR, anytime you have those mobile quarterbacks, those guys generally seem to stand out because they can make so many plays with their legs. I thought Daywon Jones, Brown's right tackle, taken in the fourth round, thought he looked good overall.
He looked better from a physical standpoint,
Yeah, the report is in Cleveland, and I don't know exactly how true that it is, but he apparently has lost some weight as he headed into his first training camp. But yeah, I thought he looked good. If he can keep his weight under control and just really focus on football, then they may have something there in Daywon Jones.
I still think if he ever gets into a starting position or whatnot, and has to, I think Watt's going to get him all he wants.
Sure.
At least for a while.
Yeah, no, I understand that. All right, Dave, let's jump into some Steelers talk. Obviously, we'll talk about camp here a little bit, but try to discuss some non-camp news since we talk about training camp so much in the special edition episodes of the podcast. Dave, with Pittsburgh, safeties really kind of struggling to be on the field right now. No Minkah Fitzpatrick, no DeMonte Casey, no Keanu Neal for Thursday's practice. Pittsburgh working out a slew of defensive backs on Thursday. As of this recording on Friday morning, none have signed, but that is very much subject to change. Ben DeLuca, Jaylen Elliott, Joshua Kalou, John Reed, and Jace Whitaker all working out. Kalou, maybe the most notable name on that list, has played a fair amount in the NFL. So we'll see if Pittsburgh adds an additional safety for maybe before tonight's practice.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the thing to watch prior to practice. We talked about that on the special edition podcast on Thursday night there. You've got so many safeties banged up right now on this roster. Well, you know, a couple of banged up, then obviously the you know, whatever's happening with Minkah Fitzpatrick there. And, you know, you're starting to get kind of worried about, you know, what's this personal situation that's, you know, keeping Minkah away for so long. The thing is it, you know, you're 99.9% sure it's not injury related, unless he tripped on some stairs, you know, after the condition, you know, well, after the conditioning run was done and all like that. Because look, if he had been dealing with an injury of any kind and needed any kind of procedure upon arriving to training camp, he would have been placed on active PUP. End of story. You know, just like it was last year with him, and what was it, the wrist injury there, getting put on the football, active football in non-football injury list and all like that. Those are what those lists are for, just more as a precaution there. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, he hasn't practiced yet. So it's not like he was out on a practice field and got hurt there and he's having to overcome something, unless once again he's walking down the stairs. You know, but I mean, Mike Tomlin, I think, has made it clear at this point it's a personal situation. So I don't think it's anything more than that. Obviously, you'd like to have him on the field, you know, sooner rather than later here. But I mean, you got an experienced guy in that. But, you know, on top of that, now you've had Casey with the ankle. Lord knows what's going on with Keanu Neal. I don't think Mike Tomlin has officially revealed what that is. I think you reported on Thursday that he looks fine. Mm-hmm. It's just that we don't know what's going on with him. And, you know, you can imagine that, you know, those three of Minkah, Casey, and Neal will all miss the Friday night light session. So that leaves you with just a smattering of safeties on a roster. So it will definitely, with them bringing in five on Thursday, then I'll be a bit surprised if they don't have another safety on the roster by the start of practice.
But as Mike Tomlin likes to say, one man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. And there's been plenty of opportunity for the likes of Trey Norwood, for Kenny Robinson. I think both those guys have impressed in coverage. And Norwood, I think, has shown improvement in willingness to tackle and to hit. It's reps for Miles Killebrew, who's really locked in as that special teamer, but still chances for him to get some time as well. And so, yeah, they certainly would not be surprised if another safety came in. But I think the guys that are getting work right now, the increased reps, especially Robinson and Norwood, are guys that are getting those extra opportunities to play, and they're both playing well.
Yeah, look, I mean, a guy, you know, like Kenny Robinson ahead of training camp, you know, neither one of us really had him circled. I mean, he, you know, in my 90 for 30 series, not like that, I made sure to denote, you know, that he does have NFL experience. And what was he, a former, what, fifth rounder, I think, with the Panthers. And, you know, has played, you know, I think over 100 defensive snaps in the NFL. And I think closing in on 200 special team snaps, but, you know, not enough there, especially with the way this safety depth chart was looking ahead of training camp, that would make you think, well, you know, Kenny Robinson could slide onto this roster. But it just goes to show you sometimes that the opportunities, how they do present themselves once training camp gets underway. And I thought Mike Tomlin had a great quote in that interview with Bryant McFadden and Patrick Peterson just a few days ago, talking about how it's his job to do you have that quote in front of you?
Something to the effect of let these guys live out their dreams. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great quote. And, you know, he wakes up every morning with, you know, the goal of giving those guys every opportunity to make the roster in so many words. And the way you do that is through competition, I think was the other tag on that he used on that. And look, I believe Mike Tomlin with that. And I think his actions have shown that over the years with several of these undrafted guys making the roster or first year guys, or look, Jordan Dangerfield just retired, right? You know, what a great story that was with him. You know, a Townsend product was kind of was he a rookie the first time that he made a roster? Did it take a couple of years for him?
He initially signed with Buffalo coming out, but he quickly made his way to Pittsburgh a year or two later. So I forget the exact timetable, but he did not initially sign with Pittsburgh, for the record.
Right. And he didn't initially make a 53-man roster as a rookie, right? With Buffalo.
That sounds right. Yeah, correct.
So what I'm getting at is I do believe Mike Tomlin when he says, you know, now look, some of these guys I think are kind of obvious, you know, aren't going to, but I truly believe that he wants to give them every opportunity to succeed, especially early on in training camp, and that no doors are closed because you don't know what's going to happen injury wise and all like that. And anyway, circling this back to Kenny Robinson, this is a guy that before camp, we weren't really talking about other than writing about him in the 90 and 30 series. And here we are now on the halfway point of training camp. And you really got to wonder if he might have a shot at being, you know, let's say if they kept five safeties on this roster, if he has a good shot at being one of them.
That's the road I wanted to take you down. Let's try to map things out. And not that we're writing this in stone, but cornerback, safeties, who do you think gets kept right now? Corey Trice's season is over. I mean, obviously the safeties that are hurt right now, they should be good to go for week one. And Casey and Neil and Fitzpatrick, you know, to our knowledge right now, will be ready for week one. So what is your kind of projection of how things look right now a week into this camp?
Well, look, the question every year when you're setting the 53-man roster is it going to be four safeties? Is it going to be five? That kind of thing. So, and I think we're both almost to the point of barring injury when Miles Killebrew, and we had said this long before too, special teams captain or bust for him, really. And with him being working as the up back and stuff like that, it really feels like Miles Killebrew is going to be on this roster. Now, if you want to qualify him on positionally as a safety, fine, go ahead. But let's face it, we don't want to see any situation where Miles Killebrew has to play any meaningful snaps on defense for this team. And even if he did, he's going to be more of a strong safety box type anyway there. So let's throw him out of the picture and put him on the roster as a special teamer. And then let's construct let's assume four other safeties make it. Well, you know, Minka, Casey, and Neil, all if healthy, are going to be three of those, you would think. So that leaves one other there. And I guess the thing is, and circling back to break glass in case of emergency with Killebrew being, he's more of a strong safety type, you would maybe think that the fourth true safety would be more free safety slanted. However, one that could potentially be physical enough to be a little position flexible and help you on special teams if you had to dress them. So then that to me leads me down the path of talking about Kenny Robinson or Trey Norwood. And at least, I mean, you've seen Norwood do some things I think that have him moving in the right direction at camp, but I haven't seen that. I'm having to listen to that through your eyes, if that makes sense. And until I see that present itself in the preseason on tape, then I'm still in the kind of meh corner. So I guess with you, where you're leading me down is based at, and I, you know, other than his Carolina tape, I haven't seen Kenny Robinson in a Steelers uniform either, but based on listening to your eyes, I would think I would have Kenny Robinson sneaking in if they kept kind of five true safeties with Casey being the, you know, a special teams captain. I mean, not Casey, Killebrew being a special teams captain. That's where I think I'm at heading into Friday Night Lights. And obviously a lot can change.
Okay, that's fair. I think both guys are really going to compete hard for that final spot. And Robinson is a little bit bigger, a little bit more well-built, and probably a bit more physical. But I think Norwood has improved there, and that's really important for him. Norwood can play some slot corner, though, and that gives him some maybe a leg up on versatility. Robinson kind of seems a bit more locked in at safety.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. I mean, there is definitely a competition between those two, I believe, potentially for one spot if they keep kind of four true safeties and Miles Killebrew as an extra, you know, special teams ace and all.
So what about corner? So you kind of mapped out your five safeties.
Yeah, can you still keep six corners along with five quote unquote safeties? Yeah, I think you can. Now where's the other position? Where are you gonna pull that extra position from? Because I think in my 53, my pre-camp 53, I think six corners and four safeties. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe that's right.
There and with Killebrew being safety number four. So could you make six corners and five safeties work? Absolutely can. I think they've done it, you know, obviously before and all. So I would be Patrick Peterson, Levi Wallace, Joey Porter Jr., James Pierre. Now that Trice is, you know, not that Pierre probably wasn't going to make it, but I think the Trice injury pretty much almost solidifies that. So that's four. Where's my, I get, you know, the way you've been talking about Elijah Riley since camp's open, you know, I view him more now. And see, that's something else to talk about in, you know, that he can provide you some emergency safety depth as well too, there. But since camp has gotten underway, I view Elijah Riley more as a slot player than I do safety at this point. So it feels like he might be kind of the leader in the clubhouse, maybe, when it comes to non Patrick Peterson usage in a slot, if that makes sense there. So that would be five. Number six.
Do you have to carry a number six? You could, obviously, but there's, it could be a Sullivan.
Yeah. I'm in a to be determined category still, because before camp too, I thought that there's still a good chance that there might be an outside guy on the roster there. Mm-hmm. You know,
so you could go five and five, though, five corners, five safeties.
Yeah, I suppose you can. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind
of
where I'm,
if you got the versatility of, you know, of some guys that are slot capable there. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a discussion of either going six and five or five and five.
Right. And so if you kept those five corners, your slot corners, you're saying Elijah Riley, early down corner, Peterson moves to the slot in passing situations.
Yeah. But it still feels like you're going to need one more in there, one more corner in there that could be slot capable.
How many did they have last year? They only had two, right? Millett and Sutton. Who else could play slot last year? I mean, I guess Norwood, you know, in theory could, but he didn't do much of it the back half of last year.
Right. Yeah, look, I mean, it's something to watch, and that, you know, I guess the question then becomes is if it became six and five, six corners, five safeties, where does that other position come from? I think I had them, did I have 10 offensive linemen? So I think the obvious place to pull from would be offensive linemen if you needed an extra roster spot like that for a defensive back.
You had as backup linemen on your roster as like more clear backups, Nate Herbig, Ryan McCollum, Kevin Dotson, and LaRaven Clark. Who's getting the heave-ho if you had to remove one of those names?
Yeah, I mean, the way you're, and once again,
it's not Herbig, I'll tell you that.
Right. And once again, not being at camp, Having to go through your reports and your eyes here, it really is feeling like Herbig might be your, you know, quintessential, you know, swing guy, backup, classic swing guard, you know, swing interior guy altogether. In other words, it feels like he might be headed towards being the backup center and playing both backup guard spots there. What do you need Ryan McCollum for at that point? You know, so if to me, it would feel like why keep McCollum? And that would still allow you to keep an additional inactive, maybe tackling, let's say, a Raven Clark, if Spencer Anderson can't make the club.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, just to kind of go back to the DB conversation where I'm at now, and things can and likely will change at safety. If it made me fill out my roster today, I'd say Minka, Casey, Neil, Killebrew, and I'm going to go Norwood over Robinson, although I think it's, as you said, a very much a competition between those two. At corner, I would have it similar, I think maybe the same to you, and Peterson, Wallace, Porter, Pierre, and Riley. We'll consider Riley a corner, and then I might stop there with five. The possibility of a number six is on the table. Sullivan may have that advantage being the veteran slot corner, but I would probably stop at that fifth guy being Elijah Riley right now.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And look, you know, that's why we do the pre-draft, the pre-camp 53s, and then kind of work off of what, you know, develops in camp and the preseason there. So, and then that's why with the offensive line, I really deemed it important to kind of pay close attention to those line rotations, especially the back. I've been harping on who's going to be the backup center since the draft, and it's fun to watch that play out. So look, there are several roster spots obviously still up for grabs in this thing, and the third running back position I think is one of them.
Although it is in the sense that
McFarland or somebody not on
the field. Yeah, because right. I don't see any internal option right now even coming close to threatening Anthony McFarland. So unless somebody comes in off the waiver wire, which is possible, then it's going to be Anthony McFarland as that third running back spot. To me, it's no longer an internal competition.
And look, if you kept the extra safety, especially one that could help in special teams, who would you keep between? If you needed special teams help right now, between two guys, Kenny Robinson and Trey Norwood, who are you keeping?
Well, I haven't seen much of Robinson on special teams yet. I mean, I know he did some in Carolina. Did he block a punt? Was that him that blocked the punt as a Panther, or was that Madre Harper? I always get those two guys mixed up from their resume. Norwood, I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far, but he was not a good special teamer last year. I do think Robinson, like I mentioned earlier, is more physical, so I may lean Robinson on that, but I really want to get eyes on how Norwood looks in his physicality, his tackling this summer.
And look, if you had a guy like Riley that ends up making the roster, he can special team. Well, I guess what I'm getting at is you can make up the lack of although, man, you sure like that third running back to play at least on one team situation, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's the issue with McFarland. He's like, if he's a backup running back, he can be a talented runner, but how useful is that unless and until Harris or Warren goes down?
I mean, yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. I mean, are you going to keep three running backs and give him a helmet every week just to stand on the sideline
right,
in case your top two running backs go down? And that's just not proper. That's not great roster construction, if you ask me. Now, without a doubt, and it's really because he's got no other competition, it feels like at this point, it's not his fault, and he's doing everything that's asked for him. He's having a great camp and all like that. But unless he, to me, and he even said this way back several weeks ago, he's got to be able to play on at least one special teams unit, it feels like.
I mean, maybe he could do kick returns. Not that there's a ton of value there, but if that is one thing he could do, it could be that, I guess.
Right. We'll see whether he gets those opportunities in the preseason here. But
Let's see where to here. Let's talk about Quan Alexander. Contract details finally announced for him, signing a couple days into training camp, and a pretty cheap deal for Quan Alexander.
Yeah, it's a it matches the Marcus Golden deal, and I put that on Twitter a couple days right after Kwan was signed. That it really felt like it was heading down that path with him, and that's indeed what the contract ended up being. It matches what Marcus Golden got. The 1 year deal totals out at $1.3175 million and includes the maximum signing bonus of $152,000. Right, I put 152 in there in the post for some reason. Shame on me, I didn't put the five in there. It's $152,500 signing bonus with him. I'm going to change that post while I got it open right now with him. And that's the maximum signing bonus allowed for it to qualify as a veteran benefit contract. So he'll have a reduced cap charge of $1.092 million overall with that. So, I mean, this is your inside linebacker version of Marcus Golden, if you will, albeit a little bit. His birthday was yesterday, 28? Was it?
Yeah. Is he 28, 29 now?
Yeah, I think he just turned one of the two, 28 or 29.
let's use the power of the internet to see. He turned 29 yesterday.
Okay, all right. And obviously Golden's a little bit older than he is. But look, I mean, as I always like to say, yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with signing veteran guys with experience to veteran benefit contracts here. So very, very cheap deal with him. And look, his deal last year with the Jets was a veteran benefit deal as well, too. Now, it had more guaranteed money in it. Because I think they guaranteed a portion of his base salary along with it, but it was still, $152,500 signing bonus. They just guaranteed a little bit more in it. I don't think the Steelers guaranteed more than just the signing bonus when it comes to him, but a super cheap ad when it comes to Kwon Alexander's contract.
And we have an answer of at least, let me put it this way. The streak of the post, whatever you want to say, OTA guys that make the 53 will continue with Alexander this year because he's making this roster, obviously. And the question is just about how much of a role he has defensively. He's going to find his way into this defense in some capacity. I don't know exactly how it's going to look, but he's going to be on this field come week one against the 49ers.
And look, you got him in right near the start of camp, so he's got plenty of time to get on the moving train, if you will. And yeah, I fully expect him to make the 53-man roster. And I'll continue saying I don't think they're done, Alex. I think someone else, at least one or two more players not currently under contract with this team as of August the 4th, will wind up on the 53-man roster. It just, you know, history tells you that's likely going to be the path here. And running back very well could be that position, you know?
If it's not running back, do any other positions make sense? Obviously, we can't predict injuries that I'm sure will
occur.
Still
think slot. I think you could look around at the slot corner situation. You know, I think that could potentially be your other spot. Now, outside of that, it doesn't feel like you know, other than if you get through the first couple of preseason games and maybe you don't like what you see out of a Herbig at center, then I think you explore that. But the thing is, we talked about this, I think, briefly on the podcast, on the special edition podcast Thursday night. Man, you had Quisenberry go down in Houston with a knee injury. It makes you feel, and I don't know how many of those other guards that they have that might be center capable, but you know, who would be the better option? A Nate Herbig at backup center, or a Jimmy Morrissey, even if he became available? You know, I view Jimmy Morrissey and maybe a tick above McCollum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, but if Herbig just
can play better guard, you know.
Mm-hmm. As long as Herbig looks competent at center, I think he should be the center. The only way they would go outside the organization is if Herbig just doesn't snap well and you just don't feel like he can play there. So as long as Herbig holds his own, then he's probably going to be the guy. He's a smart guy. He's a Stanford grad, right? So,
right.
I mean, you got to be pretty smart to go there. So you know, as long as he doesn't fall on his face, I think he's going to be this team's backup center.
And here's the thing, too, going back to center. I mean, you look, we pulled up the depth charts around the NFL right before camp started and kind of going through, well, could this guy get cut? It just, it doesn't feel like the kind of guys that might be available via, you know, trade or even cut last minute. It doesn't feel like there's much quality there overall. So mamas, let your babies grow up to be sinners, maybe, you know?
What about tackle? What about tackle if they wanted to have a fourth tackle and LaRaven Clark's not that guy because Clark's not had a good summer so far? Could that be maybe a surprise that somebody as a reserve, but a fourth tackle still?
I suppose, but it would be such a cheap player. And once again, I think you look around. I mean, heck, the Titans just cut that one of their guys that I think has a little bit of experience for starting fights in camp, you know. Mm-hmm. He might become, I mean, he might look like a golden god once he hits waivers. Isn't he the kid that has some experience?
I don't know much about Jamarco Jones's football background other than he was trying to fight Jeffrey Simmons, which is a quick way to get yourself caught. He's probably played some. That sounds familiar. Maybe in Seattle or something. I can't remember. We'll use the internet again. He played in Seattle for 7 starts.
Okay. I thought he had a little bit of experience there. So, I mean, you look around the league. I mean, you still got Chris Hubbard that signed, I think, recently. I mean, those kind of guys are still, you know, still getting contracts there. I guess what I'm getting at here is come week one, the, you know, what might be out there for you, is it going to be that much better than a LaRaven Clark?
Sure. And Spencer Anderson is there. He's worked primarily at right tackle. I mean, we talked about him and his versatility, and he's played both guard spots occasionally, really on that Sunday practice, but he's been right tackle by and large. And so if you wanted to even cut LaRaven Clark, you know, Anderson could potentially be a tackle option, although I don't think he's really going to be a left tackle possibility, but you have Moore and Jones there. So if you wanted someone more right tackle focused, Anderson would make sense. I'm just kind of spitballing ideas right now.
Yeah, I think running back, and I would probably rank them as far as probability of adds from the outside still at this point, potentially being slot, and then running back, and then probably center.
Okay, that's fair. Let me switch gears, give you a thought at cornerback. Whenever camp started, my thought was, okay, in base defense, it'll be Levi Wallace and Patrick Peterson on the outside. And then in passing situation, Joey Porter Jr. will come on the field and Peterson will kick inside. I'm still confident Peterson will kick inside in plenty of those situations, but I'm beginning to think, is Joey Porter Jr. going to be the starting base corner opposite Patrick Peterson? And then Levi Wallace rotates in. Wallace has had a fine camp. I got no complaints with him. Porter's playing so well. Obviously, he's the draft pick. I'm beginning to wonder, will Pittsburgh find a way to get this guy starting snaps week one, not just rotational snaps week one?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to defer to you on that because I haven't seen a full practice or guys like Joey Porter Jr. In a game situation yet. So, but I mean, I think it is evident that halfway through camp. And another thing that I mentioned last night, I think it's an extreme positive that you're halfway through camp at this point, all the rigors that go along with it and trials and tribulations that rookies go through. And then a couple of days ago, Porter, you know, being on the wrong end of the story, if you will, when it came to the Pickens catch and the fact that it sounds like he had perhaps his best practice of training camp more than halfway through this thing. I think it's a real testament of fortitude and everything that you have in him at this point. So I think it's an extreme positive that he, and it's not like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It's not like he's had an awful camp before yesterday's practice, right?
No, and even in the one where Pickens made that catch, Porter still had a good practice, right? Had a pick, you know, 10 minutes later and had a breakup on a throw to Pickens, or at least forced an incompletion in 7 shots. So aside from Pickens making the most ridiculous catch, you know, of camp, I mean, which I don't even blame really Porter for, it was a good practice for him.
I mean, so what I'm getting at is it sounds like he's been continually on the rise, as Mike Tomlin would say, from the start of camp until now. And if that continues through the rest of camp and on into preseason, I think you have a great argument that he could see a good amount of playing time right out of the chute.
Well, he's definitely going to see that. The question is, could he, you know, technically be this team's starter?
I think it's plausible at this point.
The only concern and only counter that I'm having with myself is how much work has Porter really gotten at that right corner spot? It's been a lot of left corner, you know, when Peterson's been either kicked inside or gotten the day off. And so I don't know. I'd have to track it, and certainly we'll be charting it in the preseason, how much right corner work he's gotten. It's been more left side. So that may be one issue with him trying to be that base corner, because Peterson's probably going to be more left side and Porter would have to become more right side. So that might be an issue there. But the point is that Porter's play is coming on so strong that his role may be even bigger than we thought once drafted. And we already kind of assumed his role would be pretty significant in year number one.
And look, I think the rookie class overall, it sounds like heading into Friday Night Lights, you got a lot of young players, you know, in this draft class on the rise, right?
Yeah, I think they're really, you know, I don't want to say peaking, but as you said, on the rise, whether it's Broderick Jones has put together some solid practices when the Pats have been on. Porter, obviously, Benton making a play in 2 minutes with a pass bat down. Washington has been better once the Pats have come on. So, yeah, I would say overall, the rookies are very much holding their own.
And then, you know, we've talked a heck of a lot about Herbig and what he, I mean, he's obviously going to make the roster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think unfortunately, Trice went down. So, you know, he's out of the picture there. But I don't think you can totally discount Spencer Anderson sliding in there somehow. If he can continue to make some progress and show some position flexibility.
Sure. So happy with the rookie class overall. Obviously, unfortunate with Trice, who himself was playing well before tearing his ACL. So at least you saw something from him and can at least think about that for next year. I want to just briefly mention George Pickens. You know what's the craziest thing about George Pickens making these unbelievable catches? His hands are not that big. They're 8 3/4. He's got relatively small hands for a wide receiver, and yet he has just the craziest body control and knack for making these one-handed type of grabs. And so I think it's a minor footnote, but it really makes these plays even more impressive. If he was a guy with, you know, 10.5-inch hands that are just massive, okay, you know, he can make some crazy catches, but his hands are, you know, they're Kenny Pickett sized. And so he's able to make these crazy plays like that is pretty remarkable.
Well, look, if there's one thing that we learned about him prior to being drafted and through his rookie season was the body control. He's got the body control of, you know, a little bit smaller receiver there. We know he can make the fantabulous catches down the field. I mean, he's done that time and time again, and he did that in college. So that's not surprising there. The question about a second year jump when it comes to George Pickens has always been about the route, you know, making the route tree more defined, becoming a better route runner overall, and then usage of him in the offense moving forward. And I think he talked in an interview a few days ago about how he thinks he's going to be used more, you know, digs and slants and all like that. And if there's one thing that we pointed out, wrote about, talked about last year, is they didn't do enough of that. They did, you know, the back shoulder throws to them. They obviously did the go ball stuff and a little lesser comebacks and curls. So the jump that he's going to make would be him getting probably a lot more, you know, several more catches, 10 or more yards, close, you know, 10 or fewer yards, closer to the line of scrimmage, and then on the move and being able to use, you know, hopefully have some yards after a catch ability to get some extra catches and extra yards that way. Cause he's still going to have what he had, I believe, as his rookie season to some degree, you know, with kind of the back shoulder and sidelines, but can you get him involved with the football in his hands, more between the numbers?
Sure. And I'm seeing signs of that this summer. We want to see it in games, obviously. But, you know, I think Pickens is beginning to round out this game and run a fuller route tree. And that's going to improve his yak. It's going to make him more effective. It'll actually allow him to win better vertically when defenders can't just sit on that and expect him to run deep every time. And they have to defend the whole route tree. So all those things will make Pickens a better player, better receiver, and this offense hopefully more potent.
And what did Frisman say recently was quoted, like, you know, everybody's seen the YouTube stuff on him now and all like that. So, you know, they're, you know, it's not like he's going to sneak up on anybody as far as that goes, you know. So he does have to become a more rounded receiver.
Yeah, it's just like a pass rusher who might have a great go-to pass rush move. Can you have a counter off of that? And Pickens, if he can counter those vertical, you know, routes with digs or slants, whatever, you know, the expanded route tree looks like, then that's just going to make him a far more effective player. So it's the same parallel between a great pass rusher and a great receiver.
Real quick, through your eyes, Zach Gentry, Is there still a meeting with the Bobs coming or no? I mean, where
in terms
are you
of what he does?
Yeah. what exactly do you do here, Zach Gentry? And I'm not discounting the guy. I think he's a very, very funny guy. I think he's got a great attitude. But you know, if Washington can come on and, you know, by the start of the season and indeed get that, you know, second tight end spot, if you will, where does that leave Gentry in all this? And, you know, it's still to some degree, we've talked about the versatility of Connor Hayward. And look, I'm not convinced we're going to see a lot of true fullback situations with him back there anyway. So, you know, if he is still kind of more H back and split out and versatile in that area, and then becomes kind of a break glass in case of emergency into the line type, you know, tight end. You know, it's not like Gentry does a lot, you know, on special teams. I guess what I'm getting at is how plausible is it that they carry just Freiermuth, Washington, and Connor Hayward?
It's possible. I would consider it more unlikely at this point. Obviously, Gentry's role and impact is going to be directly tied to the progression that Washington does or does not make. But I think even if, let's say, that Washington has a great rest of the summer, is clearly going to be this team's number two tight end and have serious playing time, Gentry would still get carried as a number three tight end, and number four, whatever you want to call him, but almost certainly inactive on game day. Because if Washington were to go down, they were to lose one of their top two tight ends, they want that big body type of blocker to be that guy that could step in, because Pittsburgh wants and needs to be a run effective, downhill, physical type of team this year. And obviously Connor Hayward can't replace what Washington could offer you. So I think there's going to be value in Gentry just as kind of that break glass in case of emergency option as a number three, number four tight end inactive on game day. So it would be Freiermuth, Washington, and Hayward getting the hat over him, but Gentry there just in case he's needed if an injury were to strike.
All right. No more questions, Your Honor.
All right. The defense rests. Speaking of, well, prosecution, people unhappy with my Kenny Pickett comments yesterday, and I understand that.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah, anytime I have any sort of critique to a starting quarterback, you know, it's going to get some attention. And I just thought he struggled yesterday. I thought, you know, it's not all his fault. I said Pickett and the offense struggled. So it's yes and. It's not just Pickett, not just the offense. It's both. And when the defense wins 7-6-1, when you throw a pick in 2 minutes, a couple other passes in team where I thought Pickett missed, and even in 7-on-7, I thought there were some missed opportunities for Kenny Pickett. But overall, I think Pickett's had a fine camp. I mean, it's not been bad by any means. I don't know if I've seen this, wow, look at the second year jump kind of thing, but it's still early. Get him inside stadiums, be able to evaluate quarterbacks a whole lot better than where they're at right now. He's been more confident. He's been more aggressive. He's shown kind of the leadership. And I just want to end by saying this for anyone who was concerned about, you know, my note on Pickett struggling yesterday, you probably lost more sleep over it than I did. You kind of got to compartmentalize. It's one practice. Not his best practice. It's okay. You put it aside. The practicing in a couple of hours on Friday night. So it's not something where I wrote it and am freaking out internally. I wrote it. I thought he struggled. You put it to bed. It should not be any sort of major deal. I promise you that.
All right. All I have seen is just a smattering of training camp videos, and that's it. So it's hard for
me at this point. I feel like.
Judgment.
you're probably watching camp as much as I'm watching camp with the way videos seem to get posted on Twitter. So
yeah, but there's, you know how it is. I mean, even you would agree, man, until we can get some all 22. I mean, I have said all along that I'm reserving, you know, my next line in the sand judgment on Kenny Pickett until we get six games into this season, you know, see him, you know, play more ball under the lights and stuff like that. And how much will we see him in the preseason? You know, what do we say? Preseason, the three game stretch is probably going to be right around 200 offensive snaps in total, if you had to guess, right? 200 on the high side, let's say anywhere between 190 and 200 offensive snaps during the preseason. How many snaps are we going to see Kenny Pickett play, you know?
Yeah, I don't know for sure. It depends on how the offense looks and some in-game type of stuff where Tomlin can be pretty flexible. I mean, you may see 50 snaps. I don't know. Does that sound about right? 50?
Yeah, I mean, 50 to 60, probably somewhere along those lines. And look, nothing's going to me. There's nothing inherently going to change any. Look, he's going to be the starting quarterback. We know that. They're still probably going to look to build, you know, to be a bully ball type situation. For them to win 9, 10, 11 games in 2023, their defense is going to have to keep them in a lot of games. I'm not expecting them to put up 30 points, you know, frequently throughout the season there. And then, you know, the biggest thing with Kenny Pickett is he's got to limit, obviously, the turnovers, the interceptions. He's got to limit the sacks and all like that. If he can come out of these first six games with a adjusted net yards per average passing attempt stat of, let's say, 6.2 or something, and the defense is playing well, they're gonna be in a lot of games. And I just think that that's the next step up the maturation process for him. And, you know, there's going to have to be some explosive play. It's not, you know, and we saw late last season, he was able to have some fourth quarter comebacks and all like that. There are going to probably be a couple of situations prior to the bye where you're going to need him to drive him down the field for a win, you know? Your job is to report what you see in a single day, right? And not draw long conclusions from it. And you have it.
Yeah. And if I do draw conclusions, I'll let you know when they become conclusions. I say that Kenny Pickett struggled the way that I might say the backup, you know, fourth string cornerback might struggle. I take it in the same one day snapshot. I'm still comfortable and confident and feeling good about Pickett and this offense's ability to make a jump in year number two. How big of a jump will it be? We'll have to see. But I think they position themselves well to have real tangible improvement this season. That's the bottom line.
And if he has a good first 6 weeks, people will come at you and say, are you ready to eat crow about Kenny Pickett? You know, and look, I think what you're passing along on a guy like even Nick Herbig is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I was firmly in the camp that I wondered if he'd be able to stay on the outside. Moving forward, I'm not to the point yet where I'm saying, well, he can definitively stay on the outside, but I mean, we got to see him in game situations and all like that. But I mean, the reports obviously have been very positive about a guy like Nick Herbig, where we had a pre-built, analysis on him, wondering if he could stay outside.
And that's why you have to appreciate a team like the Steelers saying, hey, let's try you at the thing you've been doing for the last 4 years. And if it doesn't work, okay, we can move you, but let's try you at the position that you play in as opposed to automatically moving you. And so that was the thought with Herbig and with Corey Trice. And, you know, good on Pittsburgh for giving those guys the opportunity.
All right. Where else here?
One note here, since this is a Hall of Fame weekend, Hall of Fame game last night, the induction ceremony at noon tomorrow. I didn't realize this, but they had moved it from the evening to noontime. And interesting commentary here from Rondé Barber, who will be part of the induction ceremony. He was part of the broadcast last night getting interviewed during the Hall of Fame game. And there was a question asked about Mike Tomlin, who was his DB's coach from 2001 to 2005 in Tampa Bay. And Barber heaped a lot of praise on Tomlin about his impact and when Tomlin was hired in 2001, Barber went from, you know, a decent corner to leading the league in interceptions, and still holds the Bucs single season record with 10 interceptions in that 2001 season. They're still best friends, according to Barber today. They've still hung out a ton. Barber's daughter now goes to William and Mary, where Tomlin played his college ball. And it seemed like Barber was pretty much heavily implying that Tomlin will be there for the Hall of Fame weekend, and I assume the induction ceremony, which is notable because the Steelers practice tomorrow at 1:55 on Saturday, and the induction ceremony begins noon on Saturday. So will Tomlin miss camp? I don't know for sure, but that seemed to be the direction Barber was going.
I don't know if I've looked and seen the order of who speaks to. Does Barber speak early? Do you know? Or
I can check, but unless he's speaking after a long 3-hour intermission, I don't think Tomlin would get there if he's going to be there at practice. Let's see what the order is, if I can try to.
Well, real nice.
He's last, actually. I believe he's actually last.
Oh, wow. Any chance Tomlin could get practice in, and then Jet? I guess.
No, not if it starts at noon. Yeah.
The main takeaway is real complimentary words from Rodney Barber about Mike Tomlin. So, and it did sound indeed like he's going to be Tomlin's going to be there.
But if he's gone tomorrow, then who's running practice tomorrow? Good. Is it just let the assistant coaches run it, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, I don't know if Tomlin's ever missed a practice before. I'm not criticizing for it. I just be certainly a note if that did occur on Saturday. Dave, some NFL Top 100, which came out earlier this year. It's been weird the way that they've done it this year. It's been earlier. It's been on NFL Plus that nobody watches. But anyway, three Steelers on the list in Cam Hayward, TJ Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick, number 18 over TJ Watt, who was 27. Was that TJ Watt's ranking?
That sounds right. Then Cam was what, 45th?
Yes, he was 45th. So Cam 45, Watt was, I know, outside the top 25, and then Minkah at 18, voted on by players. Don't mean a lot. Good for Minkah to get recognition. I know that he's coming off the injury season, but Watt should not be the 27th best player in the NFL. He should be much, much higher.
Right. And, you know, obviously people say, well, he missed so many games, but I mean, he's still TJ Watt. But
yeah,
I guess it's all of the what have you done for me lately type situation with that. But I mean, we went into this saying that those three were going to be three that landed in the top 100.
I was wondering if maybe a Freiermuth, maybe a Highsmith could catch that 90 to 100 slot, but neither of them did. I thought Cam would get ranked lower than what he did, but I was happy to see Cam actually. I mean, obviously, you know, you could argue he should be better than 45, but I thought he would get put lower. So I was okay with him being placed at number 45.
I haven't looked at the whole thing in one viewing, you know, as far as where they're at now to 100 or whatnot, but it, especially when it comes to like edge rushers and all like that, but it feels like you could have made a pretty good argument to put Highsmith in at 100 or 99, right?
Yeah. All he did was tie the league lead in forced fumbles and was ranked 6th in the NFL in sacks last year. Seems to me he should be able to get a little bit of love. I'm not saying he has to be the 10th best player in football, but number 98, I think would have been a fair spot for him, but maybe another big year will finally get Highsmith some love.
Yeah, look, if he follows it up with another 14, 15, 16 sacks, you know, and stays healthy and, you know, has a nice pressure rate and all like that, he'll end up on that list next year.
Who do you think is the most nationally underrated player on the Steelers roster? And is it Alex Highsmith?
Nationally.
Yeah, underrated. Not by Steelers fans, not internally, not by the fan base, but just nationally that no one really talks about. That should be talked about.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Highsmith qualifies for that.
I think so too, because you don't hear his name because obviously he's overshadowed by TJ Watt. It's hard to get a lot of love when TJ Watt's the center of conversation about the Pittsburgh Steelers edge rushers. But I'd probably go Highsmith.
I guess the ratings for that haven't. There's no way they've just stick that on NFL Plus if they weren't, you know, if they thought they could get ratings out of it, right?
Yeah, that's probably true. Or they're trying to get people to go to NFL Plus, maybe, although I doubt it's working. I don't know what any of these networks and these people are doing.
All right.
All right, Dave, anything else you want to talk about today? Or do you want to get to a couple of reader emails and close out today's show?
I think we can get to a couple of reader emails here. Let me pull up the email machine on this, and we will start with Scott writes in, hey guys, you touched on this on a recent podcast, but I was wondering if you guys could please provide a dummies version explanation. At this point in training camp prior to the cutdown, what are the key differences to be aware of between the waived injured designation applied to running back Alphonso Graham versus being placed on the reserve injured list? What happened to Corey Trice Jr.? Will Trice end up being paid his first year compensation for the rookie contract he signed? And he says, how about Graham? Also, are there any differences in how things work if a player is injured in OTAs, mini camp versus in training camp? All right, first part of the question. Here is, to the best of my knowledge, why you saw two rookies go different paths here. First and foremost, with Alphonso Graham, you're talking about a very unproven player, a rookie undrafted free agent here. Why send him through the waived injured point? I think it's more procedural for the fact that, hey, maybe somebody will claim him. And with his injury being significant enough, that he's, there's probably not going to be an injury settlement there. He's going to go to IR on a split salary if he clears waivers. And if we expose him to waivers and someone says they can't live without him, we get out from underneath the $450,000 that he'll earn on IR on a split salary. That's why I think you see a lot of these younger players go the waived injured route, just procedural, just in case another team wants to claim him and get him out of the picture there. So that would be my take on that. With a guy like Corey Trice Jr., do you really want to expose a player like that to waivers? Maybe there's a team out there that he still ends up in the same situation here on IR. And with most players drafted from the fourth round and on, they have split salary clauses in their contract anyway. And such is the case with Corey Trice Jr. He'll earn $450,000, split salary on IR. Regardless, had he been waived injured and not get claimed that way. Also, I believe anytime you waive injure a guy like that, you're basically, voiding his contract, if you will. So that would make him become an exclusive rights. He would essentially become an exclusive rights free agent if memory serves me, in 2024, whereas you still, and plus you have the whole acceleration of the signing bonus and all like that on top of it, which means you would have whatever's left on 21,000 times three is like $60,000 in a dead money charge in 2024, I believe, if you had waived him injured and he cleared waivers and he reverted back. So I think that's the difference there. You got a guy that you still have some long-term roster hope for versus a guy that, I mean, let's face it, and all due respect to Alphonso Graham, probably going to go the Jeremy McNichols route, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why you saw the difference in those two players that way. That makes the most sense, right? When it comes to that. And he says, will Trice end up being paid his first year compensation? Yes, but it won't be the $750,000 he was originally scheduled to earn. It will be $450,000 on a split contract because he's going to be on IR all year. And I would expect Graham just sounding it. They have a week now that he's reverted to IR. They have a week now to try to work out some sort of injury settlement with him. But if the shoulder injury is significant enough and it matches McNichol from last year, he's probably going to be on IR all season there. So, and as far as any differences, how things work, if a player is injured in OTAs and mini camp, I don't think there's any difference there. You'd have to decide, like on a guy like Trice, do we just send him to IR right away?
Sure. No,
as far as that goes, I mean, you still see, I think, guys waived injured younger players versus sit straight to IR, during OTAs and minicamp.
I think the contract status is probably the thing that makes the most amount of sense about why do straight IR as opposed to wave injured. I think that's probably maybe the biggest reason why teams make that calculation. And just to kind of branch off of that, if anyone wondering, we still do not know exactly the extent of Trice's knee injury, which is still significant. We can assume what some of those things mean, but we do not know for sure.
Yeah, we don't know if it's ACL or whatever. You know?
Right. Hopefully it's not multiple ligaments. I'm a little worried about something like that occurring because hopefully if it is ACL, it's only, quote unquote, only a clean ACL tear, but we don't know any information about the actual details.
Okay, hopefully that clears that up for you, Scott. Mark Miller writes in, this one is for Alex. I know it's only 3 days of padded practice, but I was curious if you have any thoughts on if we will see improved D-line play from this group compared to previous years. Cam, I think, will be Cam, but do you see anyone approaching his level of play, hoping Leal, Larry O, or one of the new guys can step up? So he wants your take after just a handful of padded practices, if you think we'll see improved D-line play.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to reach Cam levels, which is fine because trying to reach Cam levels is a pretty high bar. They don't have to do that for this defense, this front to play well. I think Ogunjobi, if he's healthy, can have a good year. You know, Hayward's still running strong. I think Adams has looked good so far. They've added some pieces in Benton. You do kind of wonder about that middle a little bit and the interior depth overall for this D-line. It's too hard to really make a conclusion based off a couple of padded practices so far about, you know, do they look better? There's some talent there and we'll keep evaluating, but it's probably too early for me to make that any sort of conclusion or any sort of even feeling about how much better, if it will be better, it could be for this D-line.
All right, buddy. Nick Shuley back in the email says, Alex and Dave, injured reserve in the NFL has me baffled for some time now. Why is it that when some players get injured during camp, they can get designation to return, but others do not? Obviously, at the time of this email, he says, I do not know how severe Corey Trice injury is. Also, when a player is on IR, are they still with the team? Yes, a player on IR is still with the team. He is just on what they call IR, and specifically reserve injured reserve list and all. The first part of your question here is, why do some look for to qualify to return for an designation to return? That player has to be on the initial week one roster. In other words, and the initial week one roster happens a week before the actual week one game. So once a team cuts their initial roster down to 53 active players, a player has to be included in that 53-man group before he is moved to IR with a return designation. So if he does not make it to the initial 53, which once again happens before the week one game, then, and if he's sent to IR before that, then he cannot be designated to return. So that's why you'll see this team, you know, and God forbid, we're not talking about a lot, if any, but if one of, let's say your star guys gets injured between now and week one, he's, and it's an injury that they think he can return during the season, they'll have to carry him on that initial 53-man roster before the week one game. And then a couple of days after setting that roster, you'll see that roster shuffling where he'll go to IR with the return designation. And then someone else will be added back to the roster, to take his roster spot there. So if any player goes to IR prior to the initial 53-man roster being set, he cannot be designated to return, i.e. you see just what happened with Corey Trice there. He immediately got shipped off to IR. He's out for the season now. So that's the differences between how players can be designated to return. They must be on that initial 53-man roster to then go to IR and get the designated to return status.
You said it well, Dave. Don't have much more to add. I would just say an example of that to return was Calvin Austin last year, carried initially. Remember, they carried 7 receivers on their initial 53-man roster, and then Austin went to IR designated to return, and that's kind of the procedure there. So, but yeah, Trice is done for the year. He cannot come back.
All right, Mario Brunell writes in, guys, should Darnell Washington put on 20 pounds and switch to tackle? Way more money for him in the future, and we get to save a draft pick. Ozzie Newsome switched from wide receiver to tight end on his coach's suggestion. Should Darnell do the same? He says, we don't need a third tight end the way we need an ultra-athletic right tackle. Your thoughts? Yeah, that's not going to happen, Mario. I would be surprised if that happened. Look, I understand Darnell had a great weekend practice in pads and some good reps about against TJ Watt and yada yada. But no, he is a tight end. He's going to be a tight end in the NFL. I don't think this is a Alejandro Villanueva situation or anything along those lines. I would be absolutely shocked if they ask him to put on weight and move to tackle.
Or Larry Brown, who played tight end and then moved to tackle back in the 70s for the Steelers. But no, I mean, A, if you map that out, okay, Washington becomes a tackle. How does he get on the field? How does he help your team win this year? Right. You know, he's going to be the backup. So if you know, maybe be hurting yourself and hurting him by not letting him play. So he's going to be a tight end and hopefully a good one.
All right, Ron, this will be the final one. He says, I'll make it fast. Is it a lock that Mason, did we get to see the other day or not? Is
no,
it a lock that Mason Rudolph makes the team? Seems like he's had an unflattering camp to date. He says, I can understand the desire to keep him since he's a vet and has familiarity with the team, but there has to be another quarterback with bigger upside available somewhere. Thoughts?
I think he's locked to make it. I don't think they're looking for extreme upside with that quarterback spot. I think they want a veteran. They want a guy with experience top to bottom in that room, a mentor, another set of eyes for a guy like Kenny Pickett. The only thing, and it may come up, and if this occurs come cutdowns, it's going to become all of a sudden the biggest story in Pittsburgh. What if the Titans cut Malik Willis? And obviously, Pittsburgh had interest in him coming out. There's going to be a million articles, including probably from us, to be fair, written about Malik Willis getting cut by the Titans. So what do you do with that? I don't know, but that's the only thing that gives me any sort of pause. But, I mean, Rudolph is here. He's cheap, and he's almost certainly going to be kept.
I tend to go that way, although Mike Tomlin was asked about Morgan yesterday and says he still has a shot, you know.
Well, he said about Oladokun last year, and so, you know.
Right. First and foremost, let's see if Morgan can even get into a game, one of these three preseason games, you know, and if he does, can he do anything once he gets in there? A guy like Tanner Morgan. Outside of that, I suppose it's plausible what you brought up about Malik Willis, but it's not like the Steelers were the only team to show interest in Malik Willis either, you know. So where would they be in the waiver claim process? And, you know, Would if they knew Malik was going to get cut, would they trade for him? I kind of doubt that would happen. So from where I sit right now, and if I'm reading Alex right, you know, Rudolph hasn't had a great camp, and boy, if he has a bad preseason, you would think that it sets up perfectly for a guy like Mason Rudolph to have a better than average preseason. You know, he's got experience and be late in the games, can get people lined up right and yada yada. You know, you would at least expect him to have some success during the preseason, but what if he doesn't?
Yeah, that's fair. We'll have to see why that is. Is it his own mistakes? Is it, you know, obviously he's gonna be playing with new people and rookies, and that may cause some strain. Rudolph to me has not had a good camp, but he's at the point of his career where he's defined by more than just one camp. There's a body of work there with him, which is not the most impressive body of work, but he's not a rookie where all you can do is judge off of seven practices. So while it's not been to me very sparkly and shiny of a camp for him, he's a guy that can still make it because of the weight of what he's done. Marcus Golden, similar story. His camps has seemed to be pretty quiet for me, but he's a veteran type that you're evaluating more than just a couple of practices when you evaluate him in his game.
I agree. All right. Got through the email machine there, and I think we're a little at an hour long here, so we'll wind this down. No special edition of the Terrible Podcast Friday night after Friday Night Lights because of how late it is, and the next one of those will be Saturday night after the Saturday practice. Look for Alex to have a full write-up of the Friday, assuming they get it in. Hopefully they do, knock on wood. Friday night after practice, late on SteelersDepot.com. And let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right, navigational bar. Also, if you'd like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button that way. So until I think Saturday night, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.